If you made a list of all the elements that have made so many Woody Allen movies wonderful to watch, that list might mention the wit and crackle of Manhattan, strong leading ladies, songs of the hit parade, funny and pointed dialogue, and a slightly schlumpy actor with no dramatic range whatsoever who reminds audiences of Woody Allen. Now, Mr. Allen has said that the characters he plays may enjoy some similarities with himself, but they are not autobiographical. He says that his movies are not autobiographical, but over the years it's been irresistible to detect some similarities, including a recent case of what might be described as the yips.
Laurie, this is humiliating. I'm up here shooting a deodorant commercial. I got two Oscars. Up here you don't need Oscars. You need antlers.
That was Mr. Allen playing a director who's somewhat off his game in last year's Hollywood ending. That movie opened to lukewarm reviews and little commercial success. Ditto his new film, Anything Else, and a passel of others in recent years. Elvis Mitchell is film critic for the New York Times and joins us from our studios there. Elvis, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Scott.
Before we engage in some speculation as to what might be wrong, if anything is wrong, maybe you ought to help us remember what set such high standards for Woody Allen movies in the past.
It's so funny, you know. I really started thinking about Woody Allen early this year when Bob Hope died, because one thing that Allen talks about is how big an influence Bob Hope had on him. And that directness to comedy, you think about Annie Hall or Love and Death or Bananas, and there's a purity in that stuff. And there's so much of something like Sleeper or Love and Death movies are so influenced by the kinds of things that Bob Hope did. And with Annie Hall, when they won the Oscars, the Best Actress and Best Director and Best Screenplay, and when Manhattan rolled around a couple years later, you could almost expect every year Woody Allen's going to have a movie out, or every couple years, and the screenplay would get a nomination for Best Original Screenplay, and there'd be two or three things in that make you think, yeah, I can't wait for the next one. But the movies seem to have become less exploratory. They seem to have become kind of closed off over the years.
In his new book, Woody Allen, A Life in Film, Mr. Allen tells Richard Schickel that his movie plots have often relied on a magical premise that, in a sense, lifts the movie out of a certain rut and turns it around into something else. Maybe one of the best examples was in Purple Rose of Cairo. Characters from an old black-and-white movie step off the screen, and the audience is displeased.
I want my money back. This is a swindle.
There's no story. Mrs. Lucas likes a story.
I still think you should turn the projector off and shut down. This could be the work of Reds or anarchists.
You can't do that. If he turns off the projector, you're liable to strand this Tom Baxter out in the world someplace. You want an extra guy running around?
I saw the movie just last week. This is not what happened.
Where is the Tom Baxter character?
Well, you'll get your money back.
I want what happened in the movie last week to happen this week. Otherwise, what's life all about anyway?
Woody Allen says that sometimes it's only magic that can resolve a tangled plot line. And you wonder, is the magic factor what's been missing?
That's interesting, Scott, because I think the movies have become less and less about the transportive qualities of movies. In the interview you're talking about, he talks about reality being uncertain and fantasy being this thing you can basically apply these rules to sort of lift us out of our experience. But without that element of fantasy, the movies just seem kind of crabbed now and made by an old crank who's really kind of sour and unhappy about his life. They actually seem to be lacking the ambition of magic.
Let me ask you about some of the muses he's had accompany him in his films over the years. Diane Keaton, probably still best known, but Diane Wiest, Judy Davis, Mia Farrow, who made the most movies with him. And we have a clip here, Mia Farrow and Woody Allen in Husbands and Wives, 1992.
You think we'd ever break up?
What kind of question is that? You know, I'm not planning it, are you?
No.
Okay.
But I don't know how I'm going to feel if you continue to not want to make me pregnant.
Hey, are we going to have to go through that conversation again? You know, you have a daughter. What?
Yeah.
So she's a wonderful girl.
I want another.
Why? What is so important? Why? It's cruel to bring life into this terrible world. You know, it's not.
No, don't glorify your refusal on philosophical grounds.
You know, if you could see the angry look in your face when you say that.
Tough to hear that clip and not think you were like watching a transcript or seeing something live on court TV.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? What's interesting about that is you think about, well, Diane Keaton and Mia Farrow, and they were some of the best actresses of their generation.
Yeah.
Who came into flower in Woody Allen movies. You know, and he wrote material for them because these are women he knew, I don't want to use the word intimately, but let's say he knew them very well and had an understanding of their gifts as actresses. And certainly the same thing with Mia Farrow, too, who looks so different from Woody Allen movie to Woody Allen movie. You kind of go, wow, he really knows how to use her and understands what he's getting out of her. And there's a kind of creative intimacy he has with these women. Or Diane Weist, you get a sense of him trusting them.
Now, he's been turning to a younger, very, very strong crop of leading actresses in recent years, Helen Hunt, Christina Ricci, Tia Leone, Deborah Messing. At the same time, the age difference is pronounced, and I'm wondering if they seem less his partners than kind of more traditional comic characters in some films.
What you kind of get now from the movies is certainly is these younger actors, they don't seem to inhabit the movies in the same way anymore. It's almost like they're walking in and out of the picture, walking in and out of his life, making these entrances, having these scenes, and not existing outside.
Let me ask you about a moment in Deconstructing Harry, and that's the one in which Woody Allen descends into hell on an elevator.
Floor 5, subway muggers, aggressive panhandlers, and book critics. Floor 6. Right-wing extremists, serial killers, lawyers who appear on television. Floor 7, the media. Sorry, that floor is all filled up. Floor 8, escaped war criminals, TV evangelists, and the NRA. Lowest level, everybody off.
I mean, there are still moments that you walk out quoting or recreating for people.
I know, and speaking for those of us on level 7, on floor 7.
Yes, Flea, I noticed, yes.
No, you're right. I mean, the fact is, he is still a professional comedian, a man who's been making a living selling jokes since he was 16 years old. Mm-hmm. Probably on his worst day, he can probably write funnier jokes than any 100 people we can think of. But just listening to that, there was a time when, as you're saying, as an audience, we expected a certain kind of surprise, if not a surprise, then a certain kind of deftness and a kind of serious practice and understanding of craft that Woody Allen had come to. And you hope he can get it back.
Elvis, thank you very much.
Thank you, Scott.
Elvis Mitchell, our entertainment critic here on Weekend Edition, also movie critic for the New York Times.
I'm watching these people up on the screen, and I started getting hooked on the film, you know? And I started to feel, how can you even think of killing yourself? I mean, isn't it so stupid? I mean, look at all the people up there on the screen, you know? They're real funny, and what if the worst is true? What if there's no God, and you only go around once, and that's it? Well, you know, don't you want to be part of the experience? You know, what the hell, it's not all a drag. And I'm thinking to myself, geez, I should stop ruining my life searching for answers I'm never going to get and just enjoy it while it lasts. And, you know, after, who knows? I mean, you know, maybe there is something. Nobody really knows. Yeah, I know maybe is a very slim reed to hang your whole life on, but that's the best we have. And then I started to sit back and